My name is Sheena Bull, and I'm with the University of Colorado at the Colorado School of Public Health. So thank you for hanging in there. I know it's probably getting towards people's limit for their tolerance of lots of sessions. So I'm going to be talking today about a pilot. Our previous speaker was giving lots of examples, so I'll talk about a specific one where we have been engaging with young people on Facebook to try and test out approaches for HIV prevention. I'd like to first acknowledge my co-authors and then indicate that I have no financial relationships to disclose. So today I really want to focus on talking about our efforts in this pilot for things like recruitment and engagement of youth. There is a lot of stuff out there, and part of my work is really trying to focus on whether or not we're getting to the people that we intend to get to and able to connect with them and engage with them using social media. I'll talk about our program in a moment, Just Us. And then I want to talk about specifically the data that we have on our pilot for recruitment. We used a respondent-driven sampling approach with some theoretical reasoning behind that that I'll talk about. And then some of our preliminary behavioral outcomes. So as was mentioned before, internet-based interventions and social media interventions and mobile interventions do show a lot of promise, but we have a relatively small literature showing efficacy that's been demonstrated through randomized clinical trials or randomized controlled trials. And certainly we're getting more of that, but we don't have a lot to date. And we know of no intervention utilizing social media for HIV prevention that has efficacy. These are just some data. I'm likely not able to read this, but the recent data from last year show that Facebook and MySpace they often change in ranking, but they're the top places for social media users. And then here, when we first started this project, we were really intending to be more exclusively on MySpace. But after we had quite a bit of difficulty, actually I'm not going to be talking about it today, but quite a bit of difficulty engaging with people on MySpace, because MySpace is really structured as a self-promotion site. It started as a band promotion site, and so people are there often putting information about themselves, but not networking and not connecting with each other and exchanging information in the same way that they do on Facebook. So understanding that there is quite a bit of overlap, people who have MySpace pages also have Facebook pages, we actually shifted to focus more on Facebook. This is funded by the National Institute of Nursing Research, and the overall objectives for the research are to understand strategies for recruitment and enrollment of networks of individuals. If people are using social network sites, we're trying to understand how we can go beyond looking at individual level behavior and wondering if whether we can look at networks and influence networks of individuals online. And then we want to look at strategies for engagement with sexual health content. Some of our other overall project goals are to try out social media sites and use HIV prevention information, document that we can use and share that information on various sites. And this italicized one is really what I'm focusing on here, to pilot test recruitment engagement methods on Facebook, and then to look at the efficacy of doing that. So Just Us is the name given to our Facebook page that was generated with a lot of input from young people. We held some asynchronous focus groups online, and they came up with the name that really represented two things. One, Just Us is really more like social justice and looking at reproductive and sexual health information, comprehensive sexual health information, as a human right, so a social justice issue, but also that this space is for youth primarily to interact. It's just for us, me not included. So we pilot tested our site that was developed with youth input in May and June of this year. We recruited participants over 6 weeks. We had two primary strategies for recruitment. We wanted to try out whether or not recruiting people online without having any personal contact was effective, and then also recruiting face-to-face. And when we recruited face-to-face, we deliberately chose venues and environments where we would come in contact with some youth who may be at higher risk for HIV. All people, when we were online, we recruited people from discussion boards and places where we could ascertain that youth were hanging out. And here we were specifically targeting youth of color. All persons were recruited that were recruited either face-to-face or online with our staff. They were called our seeds, and it was a respondent-driven sampling approach. So each seed could recruit up to three friends, and those friends could also recruit three friends, and we would go out each time a recruitment wave occurred that was considered going from one seed to their friends. That's a wave. So we would recruit up to five waves from the initial seed. These will conform our network, so we're able to look at the behavior of an individual and then an individual nested within their network. So once recruited, participants completed an online consent and a baseline risk assessment. They were exposed to Just Us content for 2 months. In this case, in our pilot, we didn't have a comparison group. We were really looking a lot just at the recruitment and engagement. And then they completed a follow-up at 2 months. So here's just an example of how this would work. So here's my Facebook page. I'm not sure how well you can see it. But a couple of things to note. So I have joined Just Us group, and as the previous speaker presented, it really is a group that's public. So we wanted to make sure people could understand that any information they put out here is public. We could have asked them to join a private group, which they could join, where it would be private and limited only to those that we approved. However, in the formative work, we really realized that in order to do that, you're requiring people to leave their home page on Facebook and go to your site. So we didn't see a lot of evidence that young people were necessarily willing to do that. They're willing to get to your site, or to their, they're willing to get on Facebook and stay on their own Facebook page. And this is an opportunity for you to get content in front of them through quizzes and through polls and through RSS feeds and perhaps threaded discussion. But they actually, if they want to go further into the site, they have to click on this icon, which would take them here. If they did that, they could explore this site in lots of depth. They could go to a animated serial drama. They could go to, for example, a blog. They could participate in more threaded discussions, etc. So just for our results from the pilot, we screened 166 people, 76 of whom were eligible, and then completed a baseline and retained 43 of those at our two-month follow-up. There was some difference between baseline and follow-up with regards to, we saw a dropout from men over time. We had a high proportion of Hispanic, Latino teens, young adults, a high proportion of African American, particularly in comparison to other research that's used online, internet-based media for HIV prevention. Here's a picture of our networks. So the great bulk of the networks in the pilot were just dyads, so the seed would recruit only one person. We had several instances where the seed would recruit a couple of people, and then a couple of instances where those people went on to recruit other people. So there's, in this network, for example, there's three waves, the seed, wave one, and wave two. In only a couple of instances would they go beyond that. So our networks are, even though we allowed people to recruit up to three friends, they mostly didn't. They would recruit only one. And I think our average recruitment, oh, sorry, did I go backwards? Oops, where did I go? Oh, there we go. Our average recruitment for the pilot was just under one, so it was like 0.77 people recruited per individual. Now, on this, our engagement results, we also allowed people to get off of Facebook and go to a website that's connected with the program, and we looked at how often they did that. And they actually started to do that in the beginning, and then the website views really just dropped off. In the middle of our study, in the middle of our pilot, these 4 weeks don't mean that they didn't post anything on the wall. It just means that the functionality of a new tool on Facebook to monitor wall posts came online basically right in the middle of our pilot. And we saw that, now these look like they're going all over the place and it's more due to our small sample, but we saw that people would post on our wall over time. We had a couple of critical things that we learned in the pilot. In order to really be secure that people, or really be confident that people were getting our content, they actually have to like us. They have to like our group. We didn't make that an eligibility criteria, and we learned that actually only 25% of the people that we enrolled liked our group. So subsequent to that, in our randomized control trial, we made that an eligibility criteria so that we know they would actually get exposed. But it also suggested to us, too, from looking at some of our engagement data, that young people, they don't want to leave Facebook. They may not even want to leave their own Facebook page to interact with you if it's not something that they're really excited about. If they're really excited about it, then I have questions about maybe they're worried well or they're not necessarily the target audience. So the challenge really is to get people who need the information engaged in the content, and what's the best way to do that. We landed on really putting a lot of emphasis on that RSS feed, making sure that when every time they went to their Facebook page, there was something that could be catchy and interesting to them. Now, I'm going to caution, these are small sample, we didn't have a control group and we didn't randomize, so I don't want to spend a lot of time on behavioral outcomes. Only thing to say is that mostly they're going in the direction that we would hope. We see an increase in monogamy, an increase in condom use at last sex, an increase overall in the proportion of sex acts that were protected by a condom or other contraception. A slight decline in intention. We're not looking at any kind of statistical significance here because of the pilot. Our lessons learned are that we can do this. You can recruit and enroll, and we're really interested in looking at the networks of individuals. Now, we're in the middle of our randomized controlled trial and are realizing that those networks that we saw, even the dyads, it's really going to be important for us to control for intra-class correlation, because it's likely that the people within those networks, and we've measured it, are more alike each other than they are alike other people. So that's going to be an important analytic issue. And it does appear to be more important. I didn't present the data on differential enrollment by face-to-face versus online, but it does appear to be important to enroll people face-to-face first. And it goes a little bit back to the question, I think, of trust that was asked at the end of the last session, the last presentation, because we could do a better job of telling people who we are, what we're doing, what our goals are. Then they could turn around and tell that to their friends as they were enrolled. I mentioned before, we have to make liking our page an eligibility criteria. There's no other way for us to know that people are exposed to our content. Even then, we're not completely certain that they will see it. They could either be liking so many groups that as those groups put up feed, your feed goes to the bottom. So every time they open it, we're not certain that they're getting it. And then the other thing that they could do is they could like us, but then block us so they could get annoyed. And we don't know to what extent they're doing that. These are things that we'll be able to potentially look at in some follow-up surveys. Let's see, anything. The only thing I wanted to leave you with is to say that from our pilot, we started to implement a lot of the lessons learned in our randomized controlled trial. We are done with recruitment for enrollment for our randomized controlled trial. We have enrolled 1,556 people in the randomized control trial, and we do have a control page. They have been randomized, and they're randomized by network. So we're randomizing the seed and then every other person that they recruit into either our Just Us page or a control page. We are right in the middle of follow-up, our first follow-up, and then we'll complete our second follow-up in April. Ooh, how's that for timing?
Very good.
Good. So are there any questions that you might have?
Let me ask one, if I may. Much has been published this fall about the type of connections in networks. And what you're suggesting is sort of perhaps a validation that networks that exist online are qualitatively different than in the face-to-face world in terms of the strength of the connection. Is that is that a conclusion that is appropriate?
It's possible that we can look at that, and we will be able to look at that with our social network analysis. We had a poster earlier this week that looked at data collected for the same study on MySpace, and the real world data, I think people may be familiar with that study a few years ago with the Framingham cohorts that looked at relationship and change to obesity over time within networks, showing that the proximity of the relationship and the intensity of the relationship did increase people's likelihood of acquiring obesity over time. In our analysis that we did with MySpace data, we didn't find that either of those things were important. What was important was the fact that you were in a network, the proximity to other people in the network, or the number of ties that you had in that network did not influence whether or not somebody, in this case we were looking at how much risk display they exhibited. However, we haven't looked at that yet for this, but we can. So we'll be able to look at who's in the network and whether or not your position, your relationship to other people in the network influences your HIV risk. The number of ties you have, the centrality in the network, those kind of social network variables.
Very interesting.
Yeah, it'd be nice. We'd hoped, with that data, what we hope to be able to say is we could look for seeds to do a lot of the peer-to-peer HIV education online through social media. That's a potential. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I was thinking about the changes Facebook and the, you know, the whole thing about privacy or whatever, et cetera, et cetera. Do you have any sense of that sort of has an influence on the kids or not?
It's a good question. So the question is whether or not changes in Facebook have perhaps influenced young people. You know, I sense that it has, in as much as we're seeing more people use the privacy settings more, even though Facebook has actually made it harder for the people to access and utilize those privacy settings. So I think they're using them more. Now, that's just my sense. We haven't really tracked that, so that's anecdotal. But the other thing is, back to this issue of trust, they seem to have, it's interesting and potentially problematic. They seem to have kind of embraced approaches to vet people around privacy and whether or not they're willing to share, but those approaches aren't necessarily very well thought out. You know, it's only if so-and-so has said that they're okay, or if I met you face-to-face and I thought you were okay, then they're okay. It's not really a in-depth exploration of credentialing or credibility. It goes back to, I think, a question at the end of your presentation about, you know, how well do these credentialing things look if people, or if young people in particular, use different criteria to assess trustworthiness. Yes, so everyone is incentivized in terms of completing the enrolling in the study and completing risk assessments, but then the seeds and each wave is subsequently incentivized to $5 for each person recruited, and that's pretty typical, as in respondent-driven sampling approaches, to think it's not overly, it's not coercive, but it's enough to say, oh, well, maybe I'll do it. And I don't think that it resulted in a run on the respondent-driven sampling incentive. Otherwise, we would have seen lots more recruitment. And we still, in this trial, in the randomized trial, we still have about just under one for each seed recruited one more person. Yeah.
Did you look at virtual credits or tokens?
Yes. So in the formative work, we asked people, what are some of the things that you would appreciate? And there were two problems with the virtual. One is that they weren't all that excited about the virtual ones. The young people said that they didn't care for those as much as actually getting a Walmart or a Jamba Juice gift card. But the other thing was, it's really hard to use those on Facebook.
Yeah.
And it just became problematic for us logistically. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.